ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति
From verse 107.
Tameva tiro vignaya, tameva tiro vignaya, prajnan kurvita brahmanaha. Prajnyam kurvita brahmanaha nanu jayat pahun shabdan nanu jayat pahun shabdan vacho viklapanam hitat vacho viklapanam hitat tam eva dhiraha vignaya prajnyam kurvita Brahmanaha na anujayat bahun shabdan vachaha viglapanam itat.
We're still on viparita bhavana, that misidentification, that error of taking myself to be what I'm not. So if you remember in the previous verse, I'm talking about what is Brahmabhyasa? In order to overcome this viparita bhavana, I need to do Brahmabhyasa. It means keeping my mind always dwelling on Brahman, always with Brahman. And so how to do that? Well, tat chintanam, always thinking about, you know, thinking about about Brahman, talking about Brahman, teaching each other about Brahman, having Brahman be what is Paratvam, what is the most important thing for me? What is primary for me in my life? Is that jnana, is that knowledge? So in this is what Brahma Abhyasa is, that continual repetition, the repetition of Brahman. The repeated practice of Brahman, that means repeatedly bringing to mind in all different ways in my life the truth of that vision. The vision that I see at the time of teaching, seeing it over and over in all of these different ways throughout the day, throughout the life. But now he says, Tam eva dhiraha vignaya prajnam kurvita brahmanaha. Now he says, the dhiraha means that person who has viveka, who is a brahmanaha, and here brahmana in the bhasha means the mamukshu. Right, that person who has a sattvic buddhi, who has that antakarana shuddhi, and who is focused on gaining this knowledge. That's the brahmana. And that brahmana who's dhiraha, who has the viveka, who has that discrimination. Now that person, tam eva vignaya. Vignaya is an indeclinable past participle. Having known that Brahman, having known that Mahavakya, aham brahmasmi, having known that, once that's understood, Vijnana means aparoksha jnanam, that vishesha jnanam, that particular type of knowledge that takes place at the time of teaching, the particular vishesha jnanam. It's aparoksha jnanam. So having gained that aparoksha jnanam, when I recognize I am Brahman, that is known to me. You know, so it's not a matter now of shravana or manana. I know myself as Brahman. So the very vastu itself, my own being, I recognize that being. So now, once that I have recognized myself, recognized this vision, so the vision is real to me. I've done the shravana, I've done the manana, I see it clearly, I've recognized the nature of myself. Once that has taken place, then he says, then that brahmana, who's the dhiraha, that person should prajnam kurvita. Now the person has to make that, not that, he has to make it prajna, paka. Right? He has to make the knowledge paka, as Swamiji would say. Make it paka means to make it firm, to gain nishta in this knowledge, so that my mind It sees only that, so it holds that clearly. So that's prajna. The pra means prakarshena, you know, to make it very strong, to make it perfect. So making that knowledge strong so that I have dridha jnanam, what we call jnana nishta. So then, now the person, that brahmana, should concentrate on that once this knowledge has been acquired. Then, so now, to give advice how to do that, he says, now, once this is the case, your knowledge is clear, then he says, na anidhyayat bahun chabdan. He says, don't start thinking about it using many words. Bahun means many, shabda means words. Bahun shabdan. Na anidhyayat. Don't meditate on it, you know, using many words. You're sitting, oh, now Brahman is blah, 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 blah. Don't have all of these words. Why? He says, vachaha viklapanam hita. Because these words just wear you out. They wear the mind out. They don't accomplish anything. Right? All you need, in fact, in the bhasha, it's all you need is om. Right? Because this one sacred syllable, om, once a person has this vision, in this one syllable, the whole vision is contained. Right? With the Right? Is this physical creation, U is the subtle creation, M is the causal creation, and the silence is Brahman. So if you say Om, the whole vision is there, just in that one thing. But we don't, just traditionally, for if you're not a sannyasi, you shouldn't be chanting Om, 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 because it will lead to having a very simple life. if you're a householder trying to make it in the world, you know, you need some little things here and there. So, because they don't chant Om just by itself unless you're living that strict renunciate life. However, that doesn't mean not to meditate on the meaning of Om, right? So Om, or sometimes we will just say Asangoham. Right? When we do Nididhyasana, right, it's not japa anymore. It's just taking a phrase, shantoham, anandoham, asangoham. Asangoham, my being is completely unattached. Anandoham, my being is completely full. I am full, like that. And when you say just the one word, it brings the mind to the truth of it. You know? Like if we can understand, like for instance, if I say the word lamp, if lamp is known, your mind will go to the lamp, right? If you've never heard of a lamp, then to say lamp won't do it for you. It won't give you the vritti, the lamp vritti. I'll have to describe what a lamp is and what its function is, what it looks like, all a lot of words. So this shastra, there are a lot of words in the shastra, in the whole teaching methodology to unfold it. But once that unfoldment has delivered the goods, so that you see it, what the unfoldment, what that teaching methodology, which takes place with hundreds and hundreds of words, when that teaching methodology resolves in the fact of it, in the nature of your being, then you don't do nididhyasana or meditation on those hundreds of words. All you need is one word, right? And that one word is just simply used to capture the mind and direct it. You know, just as a And unless there's nirvikalpa there, there's no subject-object relationship. You use that one word to just continually, one or two words, to continually just resolve into the fact. Like if I say ananda, the word ananda, and you have learned through teaching what that word ananda is referring to, it's like if I say lamp, it'll go to lamp. If I say ananda, it will go to the ananda of your being. If I say asanga, totally unattached, it'll go to the asanga, which is your own nature. If I say nitya, timeless, it'll go to the timelessness of your being, right? Shanti, it'll go to the shanti of your being, not some other hypothetical shanti. So the words just resolve into your being. So at this point, once the vision is known, you don't need a lot of words. You just need to direct your mind to the fact of it. I thought that was kind of interesting that he took the time to write that verse. That particular verse is actually from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. It's verse 4.4.20 in the Brihadaranyaka. And this next verse that we're going to do is from the Bhagavad Gita. And he's just using the Shruti. He's using the Brihadaranyaka, which is an Upanishad, as a Shruti verse that substantiates what he's talking about. And now for the Smriti verse is the Bhagavad Gita. You know. So this is also a very famous verse. He's talking about this Brahma Vyasa and Nididhyasana also sources. Ananyas chintiyantomam ye janav pariyupasate tesham nityapiyuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyaham. Ananyaha chintayantaha mam ye janaha pariyupasate tesham nitya apiyuktanam yoga kshema vahami aham. Ananyaha, anya means another. Anya. Ananya is not another. So, ye janaha, those people who, janas people, the janaha plural, those people who don't, are not thinking of anything else. Chintiyantaha means they're not thinking or contemplating, right, on another thing, on themselves as different. Let me finish the sentence. Pariyupasate. They, pari means here all of the time. They are contemplating, doing jhanam, on me alone, right? Not taking themselves, ananyaha, not taking themselves to be different than me, not thinking of themselves as other than me, as ananyaha, right? They contemplate on me all of the time, not taking themselves to be other than me. What is it for a sannyasi, for a jivanmukta? So those who don't not taking themselves to be other than me, not thinking of themselves as other than me, they pari upasyate, they contemplate on me, they hold me in their mind all of the time. Okay? For them, te sham, for people like that, for those people, nitya abhiyuktanam, who are, nitya means at all times, are joined with me, means their ahankara resolves into the atma, which is Ishvara, which is Bhagavan. So always, they're always joined with me. What's joined with me? The ahankara. The ahankara is joined with the atma, which is Brahman, rather than joined with, associated with the body, or the mind, or the sense organs. So for those people who are resolved in me, always united with me, then he says, yoga kshemam vahami aham. Sadhus say this, do this verse, chant this verse all the time. I carry vahami aham, Lord Krishna speaking, I bear their yoga and their kshema. Yoga are the, when you say yoga kshema together, yoga is, I take care of their yoga, the things that they need to have, the things that they need to obtain. I take care of that. And I take care of their kshema, protecting what they have. So for those people who recognize, who take themselves only, think about themselves only as me, and whose mind is always reveling in me, their ahankara united with me at all times, I take care of their yoga kshema. I take care of their needs, whatever it is that they need for their well-being or their survival. I take care of that. Whatever protection they need of their things, I take care of that. So all the yoga kshema I take care of for those people who who spend their time reveling in me and recognize themselves as me. So this is just a talking about that Brahma Abhyasa and that Nididhyasana, you know, where a jnani or a sannyasi, what do they think about? You know? I mean, how do they view the world? How do they view themselves? It's all Ishwara. And so what do they see? What is their platform? Is that all, everything is Ishwara? And that's how they relate to the world. So for those people who relate to the world, myself is the self of Ishwara, right? This I is Ishwara, and this world is Ishwara. For those people, I take care of all their yogic kshema. And in fact, there's a in the Bhasha here that I was reading, there's a little objection after unfolding the verse, and the objection says, yeah, but you take care of everybody's yogic kshema, don't you? Even if they see themselves as somebody else, right? You still take care of their yogic kshema. Mm. And the Bhagavan says, yes, certainly I do. But they don't know that. Right? Because they're looking at their fulfilling their desires themselves for themselves. You know, whereas a jnani, the one who sees themselves that this self is Bhagavan, right? This very self that is me is Ishwara. That Ishwara doesn't have a separate self. That means that this mind is always resolved into Ishwara, and this body then, this body, mind, sense organs, is resolved into this as part and part of this total. And so I see everything as Ishwara, and everything comes from Ishwara, is protected by Ishwara, is part of Ishwara. That's the reality of the jnani. So the jnani, that the Lord is taking care of all my yoga kshema, is a given, right? For an ajnani, it's not a given. For an ajnani, it's not understood. But for ajnani relaxes into that fact. And so it creates a whole different type of inner relaxation. Because if I recognize my body, mind, sense organs as part of Ishwara, part of the greater picture, then I see how my yogic kshema is being taken care of. I see how my life is taken care of. I see how the prarabdha is being unfolding. So I appreciate Bhagavan's, the unfoldment of Bhagavan's upadhi. I appreciate this, what we call the vyeshti upadhi, the limited upadhi of the jiva, as being part of the sameshti upadhi. Sameshti upadhi means the total upadhi. And so this body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of the total upadhi and taken care of by the total. And so the jnani enjoys how Bhagavan takes care of the yoga, that their yoga and kshema. How is Bhagavan, sometimes you can ask, you know, how is Bhagavan going to handle this situation? How is Bhagavan going to take care of this situation? You know, it's a very wonderful type of contemplation on the world as Ishwara. To watch how it's taken care of. I mean, you can fret and worry and do this and that, but in the end, there's always so much more involved than your ego and your limited capacity. The capacity of the individual against the universe is not much. Really. I mean, there's just, if you just think about it objectively, how many factors are at play in any given thing or any given decision that you make. There's so many factors that are beyond your control, you know, and so many things that are beyond your control have to support your decisions, or have to support your life, you know, and so one, as you understand that, it's very humbling in a sense, and in another way, it's very relieving, because you understand that, but you also understand that all of those factors are part of Ishwara, part of a much greater picture, and then you can kind of relax and see how the life is being handled. And in fact, the more you relax, the more you can enjoy your life. Really, the more you get rooted into the life that you've been given and the karmas that you've been given. Because they are yours. You took this birth for, not that you consciously, in between births, I'm not saying consciously, you decided, well, let me do this, 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 and this. But, not that. But it's that this birth, with this body, with this parentage, with this place where you were born, taking you all the way through to your death, is what this upadhi, this particular upadhi fits in and is perfect and is meant for this scenario, the scenario of your life. And so this scenario, including this upadhi, is very much yours, and you can see the unfoldment of Ishvara and your participation in that. And you begin relaxing more and more and more into it, especially since for Jnani, your ananda, your well-being is not at stake. It's impossible to do this if you're at stake. Because it has to go against your will. It has to go against your what is intuitive and natural for you, kind of against your instincts. If you think that your ananda is dependent on things being a particular way. It's when you recognize that your ananda, your wholeness, your joy, your fullness, your depth of pleasure, your sense of meaning, everything that matters to you as a human being is not dependent upon the universe. It's dependent, it is the very swarupa, the very nature of yourself. And the only thing that as though takes you away from enjoying the fruits of that is a mind that is in pain. Because a mind that is in pain, you know, is taking your attention. Just like a body that's in pain. It's not that your wholeness isn't there. It is. But the painful mind is taking your attention. And so whenever the mind is relaxed, you know, just as a samsari, whenever your mind is relaxed, taking a walk in nature, or it's just a good day, or it's beautiful outside, whatever it is, that has allowed your mind to, for the moment, not have any problems, not have any agitation, your experience is of a whole and complete being. It's the activities of the mind, the agitation of the mind that takes that away from you. And for Ajnani, the cause for that type of agitation is not there. And even were the agitation to come, rise and set in the mind, something, an upset comes in the mind, a sorrow comes in the mind, an agitation comes in the mind, unconscious material comes up, painful unconscious material comes up, whatever it is, for Jnani, your buddhi is just there to take care of it. Just like your buddhi is there to take care of people on the outside, situations on the outside who are hurt or in trouble or having a problem. That same buddhi is very much available to help with whatever problem is there on the inside. Does it make any difference? Inside, outside, it's all the same, isn't it? I mean, the things that come up internally, right, are hurtful or problematic or joyful, or there's so many things, you know, that come up internally. How are you with that? And then externally, so many things come up that are joyful or sorrowful or rageful or irritating, that everything possible. And the question is, how are you with that? How do you hold that? You know, does your knowledge hold that? Do you hold that in a way that is in a way that's true to your knowledge? In a way that's true to your knowledge means your well-being isn't at stake. You're simply trying to help. It's so simple. The ananda, the wholeness of yourself, isn't at stake. There's a problem, and you're trying to help in that with that problem. Internally, it's the same. Your ananda, no matter how much trauma you have inside, your ananda, your well-being, yourself, is not at stake. And so now, if distressing things come up, or hurtful things, or overwhelming trauma, different types of things come up in the mind, now it's a question of, how do I help? How do I help that? How do I help this hurt part of myself that's come up? Just like, how do I help this person? Is that what I mean? And so that leaves the mind, and that leaves the it leaves yourself free. It allows yourself to be as free as it is. Yourself remains the same as you help the troubled situation. There's an objectivity there, and so that you have the ananda, the wholeness of your being, plus whatever you're dealing with in your mind or whatever you're dealing with out there. And so when that wholeness, when the ahankara rests, it rests, the I rests in the self as Brahman, in the wholeness of Brahman, then letting, appreciating the universe as it is, so easy. Because I'm not at stake. When the ahankara rests in Brahman, as the wholeness of myself, you know, then even taking care of the distress in my own mind is not hard. Because I am a friend to it. I have that objectivity. But that, you know, that's what we need to, that's what we need to get used to doing. That's what needs some practice. In a sense, you might think, and it's hard to say which is harder, to take care of a problematic person on the outside in a way where I remain helpful and without my fullness being as though overwhelmed by sorrow or agitation or whatever? Or is it more difficult to take care of a problematic feeling internally? You have to get used to both. Yeah, you have to get used to both. And learning how to be kind to both. And learning how to be, you know, a good person or a good parent or a good swami. You know, bringing the swami to the scene in both cases. Bringing your knowledge to the scene in both cases. So anyway, when that's the case, then this yoga kshema is in a sense easy, because this body, mind, sense organs, is Ishwara. It is Ishwara's body. It is being taken care of by the whole. And so since you don't have to have it being taken care of in a particular way for you to be happy, then you can really enjoy and kind of hold in awe the way Ishwara works all of this out. It is a very infinitely complex puzzle. And your life is being taken care of within that complexity. And so to kind of appreciate how things unfold is something that you can do. You can appreciate Ishwara as you're taking care of your yoga kshema when you yourself are not dependent on him doing it in a certain way. Otherwise, we have a little problem with Ishwara. Just like a person, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't do it right.
You didn't do it right. You were thinking of me. You were thinking of me, Brahma. Okay, so that's a famous verse. So he gave the Brihadaranyaka verse and now the Bhagavad Gita verse, all talking about the ekagrata, you know, ekagrata, that single-pointedness. Keeping the mind always on this knowledge, and for person, and so this is more of a praise. If you do that, you know, then you recognize that Krishna himself says, "You see yourself as not different from me. For that type of a person, I take care of all your yoga kshema. You don't have to worry about that." So now let's do the next verse. Iti shruti smriti nityam atmanyekagratandiyah vidato viparitayah bhavanayakshayayahi iti shruti Smriti, Nityam, Atmani, Ekagratam, Diyaha, Vidattaha, Viparitayaha, Bhavanayaha, Kshayayahi. It says, Iti, thus, he's ending the quote because he's given two quotes. The 107 is the Brihadaranyaka and verse 108 is the Bhagavad Gita. So he says, Iti Shruti Smriti. The Shruti and the Smriti. The Shruti was the Brihadaranyaka quote. The Smriti is this Bhagavad Gita quote that we just had. As thus, the Shruti and the Smriti, Vidattaha, these two, they both enjoin, prescribe what? Nityam, always. Atmani, on the self, ekagratam, diyaha, the single-pointedness of the mind on the self. The Shruti and the Smriti enjoin that you always keep your mind single-pointedly on the self. On the self means what? I'm the whole. It's not just the self as consciousness. I have to understand the Satyam Mitya. And they'll explain that later. But so, the Shruti and the Smriti both praise this, they both enjoin this. And so what for? They prescribe this for what? Viparitayaha bhavanayaha kshayaya. For the destruction, kshaya. For the destruction, for the removal of this viparita bhavana. Mm. Until that viparita bhavana is removed, you know, then you keep your mind engaged in recognizing and understanding this truth. Shravana, manana, nididhyasana. Once the vision is clear through shravana and manana, then but your mind still habitually has this dehatma buddhi and it's habitually seeing this world as real and something different from me. Real means satyam and not mitya, right? So this mityatva of the creation is not there, and I continue to have this dehatma buddhi where I take myself to be this body. As long as that adhyasa, that superimposition, continues just out of habit, for as long as it does, then I need to keep bringing my mind back to this reality, which I've now clearly understood at the time of teaching, that I have, that I clearly know, right? If I don't clearly know it, I need shravana and manana. But once it's clearly known, and still this viparita bhavana keeps occurring, what do I need to do? Not more words. You don't need more words, you know? More words are fine, more unfoldment, but that's shravana manana. But what you need to do now is not tell yourself over and over that you're not the body, because you know that you're not. So that's not going to necessarily help. You're not the body, you're not the body, you're not. What you need to do is bring the mind to yourself. And if you're taking the world to be real, bring in the mityatva, buddhi. See it for what it is. It's not, no, it's, see, this is Ishwara. That's all you need to say. Once you know that the jagat, that the world is Ishwara, you don't have to do a whole paragraph. You just have to say. You have to just say, this is Mithya, this is Ishwara, this is myself. Even that. What are you worried about? This is myself, this is my being. Whatever works, whatever statement is necessary to bring this knowledge back, that's all that's required. Because when you say that, you know, then your mind knows what you mean. Do you know, and this is also part of a sutra tradition that they have in India. The Brahma Sutras, or the Panini Sutras, or the grammatical sutras, what they are just short aphorisms. Like, atato Brahma Jignyasa, now therefore we begin the study of Brahman. Then now therefore there's the desire to know Brahman. That's the one of the first sutra. Atato Brahma Jignyasa, now therefore the desire to know Brahman. Now your mind, hearing, say, if that's the first time you've heard it, you'll go, oh, okay. Now what does that mean? That's what the sutra, this phrase, is going to be unpacked. Like Shankara uses maybe 4, 5, 6 paragraphs to explain this. And that sutra is then unfolded so that you totally understand who is the adhikari, who is the qualified student for this teaching, what brings about the desire to know Brahman, and who would be able to have such a desire, who would be qualified for this teaching. And so now, once that's all unfolded, then when you say atato Brahma Jignyasa, all of this information comes. And then you go to the next sutra, which will also hold a huge amount of information that's unfolded. You say the next sutra, and then that information will come. Right? So kind of like that here. If you have a mantra for nididhyasana, like a sangoham, everything that is going to, all of the knowledge that has gone into making you recognize that, now just the asangoham will make it resolve into the truth of it, into yourself. The sutra tradition is a little bit different because those few words will bring back a whole slew of words. But the idea is that just with one or two words, you trigger a huge amount of knowledge. Whereas here, with one or two words, you trigger the vision of the self. You trigger the reality of your own being, right? It is Shabda Pramana. So now with just one or two words, you see clearly what you, who you are. And you do that until you don't need to do it. You know? If I only see the world as Ishvara and my ahankara doesn't confuse myself with my body, and I'm just living my life in this knowledge, then there is no reason to bring anything back because nothing has left. Right? I don't need to bring my mind back if my mind hasn't left. Right? Or if my mind is not causing me pain, there's no reason to bring it back. But if it's causing me pain, you know, and I find myself becoming entangled in Maya, then I just need a word to bring my mind back. So, keep doing that until you don't need to anymore. Okay. We're not done yet.
Okay, good.
Yadyata varakate tasya. Yadyata varakate tasya. Tatvam hi tvam yata tvadihi. Tatvam hi tvam yata tvadihi. Viparita bhavana syat. Viparita bhavana syat. Pitrad. Pitrada varidhiryata. Pitrada varidhiryata. Still more vipurita bhavana. This is really neat. Like, this is amazing. So he says, now he's giving an example. Yad yata varatate tasya tatvam hitva anyatatva dihi. Viparita bhavana syat. Pitra dao aridihi yata. He says, tetvam, tasya tetvam hitva, hitva. Having abandoned the truth of something, of something, yad yata vartate, having abandoned the truth of that, which is there as it is, the truth of something as it is. So giving up the truth of something as it is, yadyata, right? So here's something, this is as it is. Or if a rope, say they use in the Bhashya, they use the example of rope, giving up the true nature of something, of the thing as it is, like having given up the rope, then I can take it to be something else, right? So it means, so, anyata tva dihi. I can have a dihi, buddhi, of it being other than that. Anyata tva, the state of being other than that. In other words, you know, giving up the truth of something, not understanding the truth of something, abandoning the truth of something, the thing as it is, then I can take it to be something else. So he gives this example. He says, viparita bhavana syat. This is viparita bhavana, okay? Giving up the truth of something, I take it to be something else, okay? Here's this example. Yata, just as the notion, the dihi, the cognition of an enemy, adi dihi, the cognition of an enemy on the father, etc. That's so Indian. Just as you can have, you can project on your own father, etc. Pitra adi, your father or your mother. You could project on your own father or mother that they are an enemy. That's viparita bhavana. You know? Because instead of seeing that person as they are, right, you take them to be in a way that is other than what they are. That taking something to be other than what it is
That's viparita bhavana. You know, in India, like even in the Taittiriya Upanishad, the seventh day, we'll have to learn how to chant that. You know, it's the Matra Devo Pava, Pitra Devo Pava. The mother is like a deva, should be treated like a deva. The father should be treated like a deva. They're held in such respect. The acharya, the teacher, like a deva. You know, they always pranam to their parents, and so, you know. So how could the father or the mother, you know, be your enemy, and yet you can see them as an enemy? That is viparita bhavana. Right? So in an ideal world, that's really wonderful. But you can understand the spirit. It's a very beautiful spirit. But the spirit of the verse is, you couldn't imagine the mother or the father really, in truth, being inimical to the child, to their child. That could not happen. And yet the child can see, can experience the father or mother as inimical, as an enemy. That is viparita bhavana. But when you take that example to ourselves, you know, I can experience, I can, myself, I am Brahman. You know, I am totally free. Nothing ever happens to me. I never change in any way. And yet I can take myself to be other than what I am. I can take myself to be something that is, in a sense, inimical to me, because the body is inimical to me, not in and of itself. But if I am the body, then I am subject to birth and death. If I am the mind, then I am subject to the fluctuations of mood. Right? So I'm subject to change. I'm subject to birth and death. And all of these things, these are not who I am. This is not my swarupa at all. And yet I can take myself to be that, which is a very amazing thing. In a sense, for the jnani, it's an amazing thing, because you wonder, how could I take my being, which when I am always the same, when I am always the subject, how could I have taken myself like that, to be the object? When all of these things are experienced, they all come and go, I never change in any way. So that's the spirit of the verse. But that is the viparita bhavana. Giving up who I am, I take myself to be something else. Giving up the truth. Giving up the truth of who I am, I take myself to be something else. So, let's do the Nifta. He talks about what this, how that is now.
Atma deha dipinnoyam. Atma deha dipinnoyam. Mitya chedam jagattayoho. Mitya chedam jagattayoho. Deha jatmatva satyatva. Deha jatmatva satyatva. Dirvipariyaya bhavana.
Atma, deha, adi, binnaha, ayam, mitya, cha, idam, jagat, tayoho. Deha, adi, atmatva, satyatva, dihi, viparyaya, bhavana. Okay, here's the truth. Atma deha adi binnaha ayam. This atma, this self, is different. Is binna. It is different from the body, mind, sense organs. Deha adi. It's different from all of these upadis, all of these things that I've taken myself to be. That's the truth. Okay? So, deha adi atmatva sat. Atma dehadi binnaha ayam. Then mityacha idam jagat. And this universe, which includes the body, is mitya. This is the vision. The Atma is different, is free from the body, mind, sense organs, and the entire universe, which includes the body, mind, sense organs, is mitya. It has a dependent reality. It's dependent on my being. Right? My being is free from all of this, but all of this is totally dependent on me. Right? I am the satyam. This is the mitya. And this satyam, the conscious being that I am, is totally free from this mitya. Right? Starts out recognizing I am different. Drik Drisha Viveka, I am different from the body, mind, sense organs. Myself is pure being, pure consciousness. Then this body, mind, sense organs is given over to the jagat. Because if I'm not this, then this belongs to the world, along with everything else. And what is this world, which now includes the body? Mitya. It means this entire world that includes this body, mind, sense organs is totally dependent on me for its being. So that's the reality. So then he says, okay, that's the truth of it. Tayoho, but for these, of these two, dehadi atmatva, giving the self to the body, taking the body, etc., as the self, dehadi atmatva, and then the satyatva, the reality of the mitya. So dehadi atmatva and satyatva dihi. So that cognition of reality, of it being real, taking the body, mind, sense organs as the Atma, and taking this to be real, satyatva. Okay? So for these, that, those two cognitions, for the two cognitions, for the two things, what are the two things? One is, the first thing is that the Atma is different from the body. That's the first piece of knowledge. Right? The Atma is different from the body. The second knowledge is that the whole jagat is mitya. Is totally dependent for its being on me. So now for these two, right? The first one, that the Atma is different from the body. So for that one, taking the Atma to be the body, that's Viparita Bhavana. Mm-hmm. For the second one, that Mitya Jagat, that the world is Mitya, for that one, the Satyatva, taking the Jagat to be real, taking the world to be real. Then what does he say? Viparyaya bhavana. This is viparita bhavana. Right? This is exactly what it is. I take this world to be real. I take myself to be the body. And this is what we need to do the nididhyasana on. Okay. So now, one more verse. Okay. Tetrabhavana. Tatra bhavana ya nashet. Tatra bhavana ya nashet. Sato deha tirittitam. Sato deha tirittitam. Atmano bhavayet tadvat. Atmano bhavayet tadvat. Mityatvam jagato nisham. Mityatvam jagato nisham. Tatra bhavana ya. Nashet, sa, ataha, deha, atiriktatam. Atiriktatam. Atmanaha, bhavayet, tadvat, mityatvam, jagataha, anisham. That viparita bhavana. Saw viparita bhavana, that erroneous state of erroneous conclusion. Tetra bhavanaya nishet. That is destroyed by contemplating, owning up that bhavana, contemplating on the truth. Tetra bhavana, contemplating on the truth, bringing the truth into my being, recognizing the truth. It is that which destroys the viparita bhavana. Therefore, deha atiriktitam atmanaha bhavayet. One should contemplate, that being so, that contemplating on the truth is what destroys the viparita bhavana. That being so, bhavayet, one should contemplate on the Atma as different from the body. Deha atiriktatam. On the state, on the Atma's being different from the body. One should contemplate on that. Tadvat, and like that, the mityatvam of the jagat. One should contemplate on the mityatva of the jagat, the apparent nature of the jagat. When should one do this? Anisham. At all times. But uninterruptedly, one should contemplate on the difference between that the Atma is different, is separate from the body, and one should similarly contemplate on the mityatva of the jagat. And that needs to be seen over and over and over again until the mind doesn't, through habit, go out into it in a different direction, seeing the opposite. Okay?
Hmm. We're doing that now?
Now we're stopping.
Oh!
Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamudachate, Purnasya, Purnamadaya, Purnameva, Vasishate, Om Shanti, 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha, Hari Om.
When you get swept away with a mood,
mm-hmm.
this idea of thinking that I'm not the body and the world is dependent on existence doesn't take place.
No. But when your mind is overwhelmed with a mood, then that's the time to bring in that inner friend that can sit with that mood and be with it.
Oh, start talking then.
You can start talking, but if that's not exactly, you do start talking. But the important part is to, just like you would be with a friend that you would care about, learning how to be with that mood or that hurt in that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can, it's really important also to give the hurt or the problem inside time to, well, you can say, you know, tell me what's really bothering you. And let it go on in your presence, because then that can, it dispels a lot of the tension, and that part of you feels heard, you know. And it's just really, it's being in the presence of somebody who cares and who can objectify it without that critical voice.
You know? And you can have confidence that this will play itself out to an end.
It will play itself out to an end.
Because sometimes it seems like,
No, it will play itself out to an end if you are there willing to listen. You might have to listen for a while.
What else can you do?
You might have to listen for a few days.
Oh, longer than that. How about years?
Well, it can take time, but even if you say years, I would say if you're really listening and being with it, all of the things that have to be worked out take place over years. But if you're kind to all of the different parts and patient, then with each given part, I don't think it's normally not a matter of years. But even then, so what? You know, if you're kind and patient, then you are kind and patient. The problem is getting that kindness and patience from you. So there's not just the problem. See, that's a big thing to understand. Say you're overwhelmed with hurt, and and then you ask the hurt, you ask the hurt, tell me what is wrong. Now there's two of you inside. There's the hurt side, and then there's the side that's present to the hurt side. Whereas before you do that, there's only the hurt inside. So then what you have to do is either you're pre-traumatizing yourself, or you'll go to a friend or your therapist or your swami or somebody, to your teacher, so that they can be the one holding. You need somebody holding, is what it amounts to. You know? But there's nothing wrong with going to somebody external to hold, but you have to learn how to do that internally also. That doesn't mean never to go to somebody to be held in that way, to be understood. But your mind needs to learn how to do that internally, you know, in order to give deep peace to the mind. And you don't have to, but to give deep peace to the mind and to the unconscious. Even if you're trying to meditate, and you don't have a way of being with the different parts of yourself that are hurt or anxious or worried or don't have high self-esteem or so many human problems that are there, if there's not a way of kindness to be with those problems in a kind way, then the psyche can't really relax because it's hurting. And then especially if it's a critical voice inside, you're hurt inside. And then the one who's with the hurt is mean. So then the hurt gets more hurt. And then the mean one gets more indignant. And it's not you that's being mean. That's another introject. That's probably how you were talked to when you were young. You know? And so now you have to come, if the one who's talking to the hurt one is mean, then now you have to come in and talk to the mean one also and say, you know, you don't have to do that anymore. That's how your father was. That's how your mother was. But you're good. You know, something to help the one who is being mean, because that's also an introject. That's also a hurt part. So just kind of learning how to, these are psychological tools of learning how to be with the inside as well as the outside.
What about learning or doing that when you're not having a problem? Like maintaining, starting a relationship when things are okay, when you're not in sort of quite
that's
overwhelmed
a great idea.
And crisis mode. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And you could start that dialogue then.
That's right. It becomes natural to your psyche. Mm-hmm. And then what happens with that is that the ego, I know in a psychological sense, the conscious mind, gains a natural relationship with the unconscious mind. So whatever the unconscious is throwing up, whatever kind of thoughts are coming up, you know, you don't have to wait for a calamity and a trauma. That's a really good point. Whatever thoughts are coming up or feelings, you can be there in dialogue with it.
It really helps, you know, how you pointed it out a while back, about a year ago or something, how to kind of, you know, create an inner landscape and always check in somehow.
Always check in.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Check in.
Yeah.
And how's it going? You know, something got you angry during the day and you kind of couldn't deal with it, so you pushed it away.
Exactly. And you know, in the meditation, in the mornings, if you do a morning meditation or whatever, it says part of the meditation is if you ask, part of it can be to ask inside, does anyone have anything to say? You know? Anybody inside have anything to say? It's a way of checking in. And then even things that are sitting there kind of dormant. Even to ask your conscious mind, before you really start meditating or relaxing, ask your conscious mind, okay, tell me what's on your mind. Just talking to yourself, the conscious mind. What's on your mind? What do you have to do today? Do you have any concerns, anything? Let the mind say all that. Because then it's not holding the pressure. Oh, now I'm not going to be able to think or talk. You know, I have to meditate, then I'm not going to be able to think or talk, and I have this on my mind and that on my mind. So you say, tell me what's on your mind, what needs to be taken care of today, what are your concerns. Then the unconscious, does anyone inside have anything they want to tell me? Anything, any concerns, anything you want to share? And then you listen. And then say, is there anything else? You know, respond to, is there anything else? And when that feels quiet, then you can do a good thing.
Well, I used to think, you know, like, what does that have to do with moksha, you know? But actually, that is exactly, because when that's clearly cleared up, when that agitation has stopped, either emotionally or mental, you see, who you are is always there.
Yeah, it's always shining.
Yeah,
right.
And then it's, you know what I mean? There's no seeking, there's no trying to understand more words, and so on.
That's right. Because you've learned how to handle, it's antikarana shuddhi. All of these values, shama, dhamma, and all of these values, kindness, ahimsa, all of these things, what becomes problematic is we haven't learned how to turn those inside, or even that there is an inside to turn them to. You know, many people don't even know that there's an inner life, that these values have to be turned toward, not just outside. And when you're as kind to yourself and all of the different parts inside as you are to the outside, it starts both help each other and the mind gains a much, what we call antikarana shuddhi, it becomes restful, peaceful. And then this knowledge, then you gain a real nishta in this knowledge because the mind is in harmony with it. And even once these kind of skills are learned so that you understand them, then no matter what is going on, all the problems in the world don't stop, and the problems in your mind won't stop either. They become much less because there's no one making it worse inside. There's somebody making it better inside. And the one who's making it better is fine. That's buddhi, right?
So this unconscious, you know, it's infinite. I mean, so the idea is you're holding that with a...
It is infinite. Complexes are, in a sense, infinite. But
well, the beauty there, too, you know. I mean.
But you know what? The big complexes that cause you a lot of pain, those are the ones that we're concerned about because they come up and create a lot of pain in the mind. And those are finite. Those aren't infinite. And then once you become adept, what we call kaushalam, right? Adept at learning how to be with others internally and externally, how to be kind, you know, because your well-being isn't at stake. Then they all will start relaxing and because they feel loved. You know, love is the... It's kind of the sunlight that allows things to grow and mature and relax. It's really hard for anything to really happen without that love. In especially in terms of transformation, external or internal, you know.
Small radio talk this morning about the Dalai Lama, and that's what they were praising him about, is his kindness in to himself and to others, and all the time kind.
It's a great sadhana for him. Yeah. I think it's the primary sadhana for antikarana shuddhi. You know, in the skillfulness in action, but what it really means, it's a word that goes along with, in karma yoga, the prasada buddhi, where I take everything as as prasad from the Lord. And kaushalam is appropriate action in the world, skill and action in the world, like knowing what is dharma and adharma. Knowing how to be with your mind in the way that we're talking about, that's kaushalam. You know, skillfulness in negotiating the world in a way that brings about shanti.
So the world, both internal and external.
That's right.
Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
Sorry, what's antikara shuddhi again?
Purity of mind.
Okay.
Yeah. Shuddhi is purity. Antikarna, antaha means inner, karana instrument. It's named for the mind. The inner instrument. Antikarna. Antikarna shuddhi. Purity of the mind. Purity of the inner instrument.
But sometimes you say that antikarna shuddhi is peaceful mind too.
Shanti.
Pure mind is a peaceful mind.
Yeah. That's right. That's why antikarna shuddhi, sometimes I talk about this shuddhi, this purity, you know, is a kind of a loaded word.
Yeah.
What does purity mean? Well, it means just peace. That the mind is at home. The mind is comfortable with itself. It enjoys it. The mind is enjoying its natural state of being comfortable with itself. That's antikarna shuddhi. It's not something, you know, away from our range or what is normal for being a human being. In fact, we have moments of antikarna shuddhi all the time, but when we talk, you know, because there's times when you feel completely comfortable with yourself, they don't last very long. So when we're talking about antikarna shuddhi, it's in light of this knowledge. It means that, you know, your mind, in terms of the values and whatnot, has grown to it. You know, relative peacefulness. And then that resolves into a more absolute.
But it's still relative peace, though.
It's always will be relative peace, in a sense, in reference to the mind and the body and the sense organs. But with knowledge, it's absolute because the Atma is not relative. Mm. Right? And in the end, the real antikarna shuddhi is just the changeless abiding of your own self. And that is the truth of the mind. Right, the self, the Atma, is the truth of the mind. So that antikarna shuddhi, the truth of it is the Atma. And the Atma is always the same, it is always pure, it is always absolute. And so when the mind is relaxed into the Atma, it enjoys the antikarna shuddhi of the Atma. Whereas when we don't know the self, we are gaining relative antikarna shuddhi, relative relaxation of the mind, based upon how we behave in the world, like dharma, kindness, how you treat your own mind, gets relative antikarna shuddhi, right? And that's what we're learning. And then that, in light of this knowledge, as the mind relaxes, then the true antikarna shuddhi, the source of the antikarna shuddhi, the thing that
right.
actually is shuddhi, let's put it that,
yeah.
that which actually is shuddhi, yeah. inviolate shuddhi, is the Atma, is the self.
And where does this kaushala fit in? Right when
Karma yoga.
When we are talking
skillfulness
now.
In action, like
yeah.
how your ability to be kind, to be dharmic, to behave appropriately in the world, to treat your mind appropriately, to know, to understand how to be with your mind, to understand how to be with the complexes, to gain vairagya, to be able to have shama and dhamma, to be able to let things go, you know, all of those qualities, understanding how to negotiate all of that in the world, having those skills, a lot of those skills,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
knowing how to be with your mind when it's upset is a learned skill. Because otherwise, you will be upset and then just flounder. That's not kaushalam. You're upset and hurt and all of this. And then probably feeding the hurt even more. But there's no kaushalam or knowledge about how to be with that hurt in such a way that that it can heal and relax. So if you do know how to do that, that's kaushalam. You have that skill, you know. Or even knowing that there's an inside to be kind to and an outside to be kind to. And under that understanding that it's really that kindness that that heals. And that the other doesn't. You know, doesn't usually give good results. We keep learning that lifetime after lifetime.
I really like this bunch of dust.
I do too. Okay, so now we have one more week. Sunday's the last class for a while.
How long will you be gone?
You know, we're scheduled to fly back on the 27th of June. But we might, depending upon different things, Swamiji's leaving the ashram on June 19th. So if we don't have things to do there, we'll just change the ticket and come home earlier. If we have things to do, then we'll stay. You know, if there's some use where we want to stay, the ticket goes to that length. So.
Oh, well, we'll get an email if you come back soon.
What would the first
probably on July 2nd.
You know, to be kind, you have to take a risk.
Probably. I mean, that would be the latest. I think probably the 28th would be cutting it close.
July 2nd is the first.
Yeah. And then we'd just start up again.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be like a continuum, but it won't. We'll just start again.
Yeah, we just start again.
But will there be class Sunday, though?
Next Sunday, yeah.
That's it then, right?
So Thursday,
Saturday. I remember when I hadn't heard Swamiji for two or three years, and I sat down in the class that third year.
Yeah.
And it was like I hadn't been gone. It just kept going. Like from the day I left. So it was really neat. In this radio interview, they said that the Dalai Lama went to some big hotel and met Obama or somebody like that. You know, and he greeted them, and Obama greeted him. And then after the meeting was over with, the Dalai Lama went around to all the staff and greeted each of the staff, the servers and the cooks and everybody, you know.
He was just here, you know.
Oh, it's so sweet. You know, yeah.
He was at the Greek theater.
But I mean, everybody was important. You know.
Mm. The next day after that, when he was at the Greek Theater just a couple weeks ago, then he went the next day and he served food at a homeless shelter.
Yeah.
And he told the people, he said, I'm homeless too.
Yeah. That's equality. But I liked it when I heard that he greeted the staff and the doorman and he the guy that whistled the limousines and stuff.
Yeah, and the thing is that we all love those qualities.
Yeah.
Those are the human qualities. The others aren't our human qualities. Yeah. And they're ones that we're trying to overcome. These are the ones that we love. Mm. You know, and value.
Yeah, they said in that radio interview, he said that the Dalai Lama was looking forward to visiting that homeless shelter the most.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Along with giving his talks, you know.
He's really sweet. He does when he comes out, like if you're just standing there, you know. He looks at everybody and smiles at everybody. Swamiji's like that too.
Yeah, but to me that's also in understanding karma yoga, that's kaushalam. Mm. Such a simple thing, you know, if you think about it, to greet people, to be glad to see them, you know. Mm. But that's something to discover.
But the simple becomes hard to, you know. I guess the class is over.